Okay, so in a brief overview, tell us what it is about the current money system that in your mind stands in contradiction to the principles of Jesus.
Well, the gospel message, as I understand it from Jesus, is that God is our loving Father, and His love is outward in its satisfaction seeking. So for God to be satisfied, He is satisfied by loving other people. And so His children experience His love in a real and literal way as it flows through our personalities. That flow from God through us to people is a beautiful flow. It's the kingdom of heaven. And as the kingdom of heaven is nurtured, the individual is also well taken care of. So it is better to give than to receive. The money system that we have, the euro-dollar system and the central banking system that is in place in much of the world, does not operate under those principles, but incentivizes fighting for an artificially scarce amount of money. The money is made scarce by this system, and it inherently sets people against each other to try to meet their own needs rather than accomplishing some kind of collective wholeness together.
Okay, and there's a lot to unpack there. I want to ask you first what you meant when you said when there's this symbiotic give and take between God, His people, and His people one with another. You said that the individual is more taken care of. There's more of a life-giving dynamic in these relationships. Can you flesh that out?
Yeah, well, we become most really who we are by serving others in the ways that are creative, that are, you know, unique to our skills, to our gifts, to the personality that God has given us. And then when we find where those gifts meet needs in the community, that is when we feel most alive. That is when people feel the flow of divine love, when we're being ourselves, doing what we're good at, actually accomplishing something for people in a way that's quite natural for us because it's coming from within us and meeting real community needs.
So you're suggesting that the environment that's created because of this artificial ethos of what it takes to survive economically in this world sets people against each other and therefore breaks down that ultimate paradigm that would reflect God in His dealings with the people and...
Yeah, I would say that's the design, that's the goal of this method of control. Really, the money system is a method of control in its current form. And yeah, that is the design for a small group of people to rule a majority of people, is to gain control of the creation of money, which is really just a tool to help people cooperate. But you have gained the monopoly control of that, and you make it scarce. So if you make more debt than there is money, then people will have to fight to pay off their loans, and they won't be inclined to take time to think and work together. But the system, the economic system, is designed to keep us separate and fighting with each other.
All right, so there's a lot even in that that we need a little more clarity on. Let's talk about, you've used the word artificially scarce a lot, that money is artificially scarce. Can you unpack what you mean by that and how that has an impact on just the day-to-day lives of everyday people?
Sure. To answer that, I gotta explain how money actually comes into existence, how dollars come into existence. And this is where a lot of people have been misled, and a lot of people are still in the dark about how money is actually created. But in our current system, since 1913, when the Federal Reserve Act was passed here in the U.S., the power to create money, except for coins, which is about 1/10,000th of the money supply, the rest of the money is created by private banks. The government doesn't create our money. That's what most people tend to think. And the way banks create money is also a shock to many people. But they create money in the form of loans. So when I go to the bank to get a loan for my house, that's new money into the system. If they approve me for that loan they put $200,000 in my checking account, and my promise to pay that mortgage, they put on the books as an asset. So that, in their view, balances out. Created 200,000 new dollars, but that's not so bad because it represents my promise to pay. I'm going to produce things, I'm going to farm, I'm going to grow food, and eventually $200,000 worth of goods and services will come into the market. So that's not necessarily the problem with the money. How it's created scarce is when they give me that loan for $200,000, they create that $200,000 by putting it in my checking account. That's new money in the system. But they're expecting back more than that $200,000, right? They lend it with interest. So I got a quote-unquote good rate, 4.66 or something, you know, about 5%. So they're expecting back, if I do the 30-year thing, you know, almost another $200,000 in the form of interest. But that interest that I owe wasn't created in this loan. Only the principal was created. So about twice as much is owed to the bank as was created by the bank. So since all money comes into existence in this way, through loans from banks, and all loans carry this interest burden, there's far more debt than there is money. We hear everyone's in debt. This government's in debt. Who's everybody in debt to? Well, it's to the banks. The banks are creating more debt than money. The opposite of God. God creates more goodness than existed. Where the banks are creating more emptiness and more indebtedness.
Okay. It's a confusing concept, really, to understand. You suggest all money is created through the banks.
Yeah, in the form of loans. Interest-bearing loans.
So you're saying there's no money at work in the system right now that isn't part of that structure of the banks creating money by giving loans? I mean, for example, what about businesses who start from the ground up, don't get a loan from a bank, and just through hard work and diligence and fortitude and honesty create a good business that succeeds and they have money? The bank didn't give them that money. So where does that paradigm fall in this whole scheme?
Yeah, well, what you're getting at is, yes, it's certainly possible to create wealth without this kind of banking, these debt notes. Yes, that's the truth of the matter. Wealth comes from the earth, from the resources God has given us in the earth, and from cooperation. Two people working together can create more than the sum of what they could do individually. So cooperation, being a good business person and earth's natural resources, can cause wealth. If that person is using U.S. dollars in his business, those dollars came in the form of these interest-bearing loans through banks. Those dollars represent a debt owed to a bank. Every dollar does.
So every greenback in this person's business, let's say he sells shoes, and someone buys a pair of shoes for $30 and gives him $30 in cash, you're saying that cash, at one point or another, got into the system because the bank gave a loan to somebody. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yep. Except for coins, metal coins, the government actually makes those. But everything else is under the power of the Federal Reserve and the banking system.
That's only been the case since 1913. How did it work before then?
Well, it's been an ongoing battle in the U.S. There's actually a really interesting history in the United States of public money, money for the good of everybody, which is what it's designed to be. It's, you know, money's only true function is to facilitate the exchange of goods and services. It's supposed to just help people serve each other. Really, that's its only value, is to help people serve each other by exchanging goods and services. So there are really great historical models. Ben Franklin's Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in the Revolutionary times had a really efficient public money model, where the government would create the money and then the interest paid on those loans would go back into the community in the form of, would spend it on whatever it needed. So there were low taxes, very easy credit. It was a very efficient way of cooperating. It was an example of the people using their minds, using their knowledge from previous banking experiences. Anyway, they just had a real good model. And when Ben Franklin went to England, economists there were baffled by how there was such robust economic activity. And they asked Franklin, you know, how do you do it without gold? The British banks had the gold and they would lend it at high rates. And so Franklin explained the system, how you do it. You just keep tabs on unemployment, basically. If there's any unemployment, the government can produce money, get people to work, and they have more money to buy things from other people. And a rising tide lifts all ships. So he explained this to them. They went to the king, and pretty soon the king was demanding the colonies paid their taxes in gold-backed notes. So the colonists would have had to borrow from the same British bankers that were trying to gouge them in the first place, and it led to just basically slavery conditions. And according to Ben Franklin, called the father of paper money, that's what the Revolutionary War is about. The colonies wanted sovereignty over their economic activity.
Okay, well, so if it was such a great model, and thus it came to pass there was a war, achieved independence from Britain, why did that system not get reintroduced?
Part of the problem was that paper money systems in other states and the continental script that ended up, you know, funding the revolution got inflated for various different reasons. You do have to do it intelligently, as Ben Franklin pointed out. You don't just print money at a whim. It's only if there's somebody who wants to work, who needs money to produce something. And if money is the only factor missing, then it's good for everyone if that person's working and getting money and serving the community. So continental script had been inflated through various ways. So at the time of the Constitution, they had been wary of paper money. There was still a long debate. Thomas Jefferson versus Hamilton was one of the early debates about keeping the money power local versus in the hands of the moneyed elites. And then the conversation went on over time. Andrew Jackson took very strong stances against the private banks. Abe Lincoln printed greenbacks, which was government money. There's a long history of the fight for public money. Sometimes if the people aren't diligent in fighting for our freedoms, you know, they can be taken from us.
We're going to return to this complex and fascinating conversation where we'll pick up where we've left off here. And until next time, this is Wendy Murray for Poets and Lunatics.